This is Cyber Defense Radio with your host and cybersecurity expert, Gary Malefsky. Gary brings to you another globally recognized cybersecurity executive in the hot seat today.
Sitting in my hot seat today is a very special guest. Antonio Sanchez is the principal cybersecurity evangelist at one of my favorite cybersecurity companies, Fortra, at FORTRA.com. Antonio, welcome to the hot seat.
Thanks for having me, Gary. Excited to be here.
So Fortra knows a lot about cybersecurity. You guys have an integrated portfolio, scalable solution, solving a lot of problems. You guys have been doing incredible secure file transfer for years, threat intel, so much. And, you know, meanwhile, we've got all these things happening where the internet is changing the dynamics and social media is very hot. And there's these platforms. Are they back doors? Are they being used to change the way we behave? And let's start with talking about what's going on with TikTok. What are your thoughts?
That's an interesting one. I mean, it's interesting to hear, or what I've read is the arguments over banning TikTok. I mean, there's a very real concern regarding privacy issues because TikTok is owned by ByteDance, and ByteDance is a Chinese company, and therefore they have to abide by Chinese law, which includes handing over details, user information about its users, about its subscribers. You know, so that's a real concern. But right now it's a theoretical concern. I mean, the bigger concern out there would be, I mean, this year there's going to be about 50 countries that are going to have elections of some way, shape, or form this year. Bigger concern out there should be about, you know, what to do about deep fakes and what to do about misinformation, not just on TikTok, but really all the social media platforms, like, because that's a now threat and concern versus, you know, right now, at least for me, the TikTok ban is hypothetical and it's not even here yet. So there's more pressing issues to be concerned about. TikTok is a part of that, but so are all the other social media platforms as well, because they're all collecting vast amounts of personal data.
So I don't know anyone who's read the end user license agreement for TikTok. I don't know anyone who's read the EULA for Facebook, for example, an American company that collects massive amounts of data. And most people don't even read the EULA for their cell phone when they turn it on. So are smartphones, are these back doors to spy on us, or is it creepware? What's going on?
I mean, at the end of the day, you know, there are concerns even for all the social media platforms of how that data is being used, how it's being harvested, what could be done with that data with respect to surveillance. I don't even think that there's really the concern about backdoors, because there's so much data that's being harvested. There's data brokers that are harvesting data, and those data brokers could even, you know, just monetize against that data from whatever actor they want. So I'm more or less concerned about whether or not there are built-in back doors, and more concerned about who's doing what and how is the data being managed. And if there's going to be a serious concern over privacy, then it really should start with how much data are social media companies in general allowed to collect, and then who's going to enforce that. It has to be something that happens at the national level. Right now, a lot of that stuff seems like it's happening at the state level, and it really kind of varies in terms of what states are doing. So if privacy is a real concern, and hopefully it is, you know, there's got to be something that's got to happen where you're basically proposing some sort of legislation or some sort of restriction on the amount of data that's being collected and being scraped, and then being collected when you agree to use a lot of these social media platforms, TikTok included with that. But again, a lot of the stuff that they're talking about TikTok, and with the concerns of privacy, you could almost just replace the word TikTok with any other social media platform out there, be it Facebook, be it Snapchat, be it, you know, whatever the case may be. And a lot of the arguments still hold true about concerns about privacy and surveillance.
Well, it leads me to the conclusion, you know, we've got Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, NFC, microphone, webcam, GPS. We have so much intel on who you are, where you are, what you're doing. I heard once Apple called up Facebook executives and said, you're going to have to stop calling the GPS function so frequently. You're taking our batteries and draining them faster than ever. And that was just Facebook alone. I have no idea what TikTok's doing, but, you know, there's these apps that want to show you getting older, and facial recognition apps that seem fun for kids, and adults are playing with them, and they're putting out videos on TikTok about, look at me, 20 years from now. And but these apps are collecting a ton of information, including facial recognition and where you are at the time they're doing it, and the end users are oblivious.
Right. And it's not just the social media companies either. I mean, you can look at the fitness companies. A lot of the fitness companies are creating their own apps where they can track your routes, where you're hiking, where you're running, where you're biking. And in many cases, some of those apps are always on and they're still tracking you as you're walking into a building. I mean, if you're a high net worth individual, probably be very concerned about what are the apps that are kind of running all the time in the background, and are they demonstrating patterns and things that things about me that maybe I don't want a potential enemy, adversary, whatever you want to call it, to know about me. Now you apply that same thinking to perhaps high-ranking government officials in different countries. And there's already been some instances of some of those fitness apps that were tracking high-ranking government officials in other countries and knowing their habits and their patterns and whatnot. So it's not just the social media apps, it's really a lot of the apps. And fitness is becoming very much kind of a social function where people are saying, I ran 3.5 miles today and felt great. Post and let the whole world see.
That's amazing. And the thing about that, it leads me to the conclusion that we need maybe a chief privacy officer at every company that's going to provide an app like this. And they need to be on the hook or on the line for really proving the protection of our data, especially complying with international state and federal government regulations. There are a lot of regulations for data protection, data privacy, but I think most of these vendors are just building their favorite app with the best features they can. And the VP of marketing and the product manager are talking about how can we collect more intel on our clients because we want to provide a better solution. And meanwhile, how secure is the data center if they don't have Fortra?
Well, right. I mean, and there has to be some sort of oversight between from the time something gets created to the time it gets published to the world. So if we go back to the phone example, you could post something to the App Store having a number of vulnerabilities or being able to take a bunch of information, a bunch of personal information, and there's really not a lot of oversight that says, hey, this app is out there and you can use it. There has been some proposal about being more upfront about, this is going to collect this level of information, unless you take action to do something about it so it doesn't collect it. But again, I mean, the privacy concern is absolutely real. The hypothetical concern about it being used by, the largest geopolitical rival for the United States anyway. And there's already been some instances where there have been instances of that where a Chinese owned organization operating in another country has gotten a hold of data and information, and they didn't use it, or at least that's not known. But I mean, just the fact that they were able to get it, I mean, again, the concern is real. So it's people have to build more security. There has to be legislation, not just here in the United States, but really something more broadly. So it's up to all the countries to be able to adopt stronger, more stringent requirements as it relates to the type of information that's being collected about people. And then for the organizations that do collect it, they have a responsibility to be able to, in fact, protect that and protect that from being able to leave the premises because they're collecting a lot of PII of these folks. So they've got to ensure that now that they have it, that they have a responsibility to be able to protect that.
And our government agencies have to also comply. It can't be the do as I say, not as I do. I recall the OPM breach where 22 million records went to the Chinese government. And that's put people's lives in jeopardy even. So we've got to get serious about, I think, having a chief privacy officer in any organization. I don't know if the CISO or CISO should be the one in charge of that or work with them, but data privacy, data protection. PII is stolen all the time, all the time. And it's just always in the news, whether it was a city, a federal government agency, a bank, anybody. The breaches have Facebook had huge breaches, Yahoo had huge breaches. You go to privacyrights.org, or there's this visualization database showing all the breaches. and they're big and they keep happening. What can they do other than hiring a privacy officer who gets it and knows about the regulations? What else can they do? Do they better cyber hygiene? Is it cyber hygiene 101? What's going wrong?
You know, one of the things that we hear a lot from security leaders when we talk to them about protecting their organizations, protecting the data within the organizations, some of the themes come back, or the themes that come back are pretty much similar. And that's kind of do the basics well. Do the basics well, know the goals of the organization, know how they intend to drive business, know how the data flows go within the organization, who has access to what and when, know how it needs to be protected as it goes from one organization to another, know how it needs to be protected when you're talking with business partners, when you're working with business partners outside the organization. So now we're talking about your supply chain and ensure that you've thought about that and you have those controls in place. Everybody is somewhere in their security posture, and everybody's security posture can always be improved. Everybody's always evolving their security strategies. And again, they need to think about what are we doing? What did we do before? Did we have something happen? What can we learn about something that happened? Can we apply something to be able to prevent that from happening again, both immediately at the point that it happened, as well as further upstream to be able to prevent it from happening again? Awareness, data handling, or just, security awareness in general is becoming more and more important, especially as the attacks are becoming more and more sophisticated, particularly stuff like email and phishing attack. But it goes back to ensuring that you do a lot of ensuring you do a lot of the basics well, ensuring that you're always looking at vulnerabilities and trying to address those vulnerabilities as you're developing your products and solutions. And then, once again, just taking that responsibility of seeing what else do I need to do that maybe I'm not doing as well today. Again, nobody has an unlimited budget, nobody has unlimited resources, but if you know the goals and the drivers of the organization, you know how you can support that, and being able to understand how your data flows within the organization will go a long way to ensuring that you have a strong strategy in place to prevent leaks or minimize the chances of a data leak from happening.
That's Antonio, that's great advice. And as we get back to the TikTok story and Congress and the federal government and their concerns, sure, it's creepware, it's spyware, but it's not called malware. Facebook is creepware and spyware, but it's not called malware. I mean, all these apps that collect way too much intel on the users, it's really claiming to give you a better experience or to personally advertise the things you're going to be thinking about buying in the near future, right? So I question if we take away the First Amendment right of our citizens to access information, even if the information is fraudulent. I think it's a slippery slope. How do you feel about that?
You're absolutely right. It is a slippery slope. On the one hand, you want to allow people to be able to say, "I want to make the decisions on the things I want to look at. If I don't want to look at this video, this stream, this whatever it is, then I have the choice to do that. I don't want somebody else making that choice for me." On the flip side is, am I being bombarded with a bunch of CISA has a great term for it. They call it synthetic media. So all the video, audio, still images that are artificially created in some way, shape, or form that are bombarding you about some topic. So let's go back to the election example. Maybe you're being bombarded to be able to sway you to think that, this particular group or this person or this party is terrible, whereas this other one is wonderful, and paint a rosy picture for it. That's a real concern. Social media strategies, as for elections have been out for a while now, but again, the spread of misinformation, we're in the era of disinformation, and so there ha we have to do something, or somebody has to do something. Countries need to do something about limiting some of the synthetic media, because I mean that's one of the concerns that they called out in the TikTok ban about getting people to sway a certain way, be sympathetic to something. But at the same time, again, that's something that goes beyond just them. It goes across all social media platforms. It is a slippery slope, but there's got to be common ground in there somewhere.
I think the fact checking that Elon Musk added to Twitter and the fact checking where it's powered by the people, are these things are very helpful For example, a Wikipedia article that has some baloney in it, the audience of Wikipedia and the moderators figure that out pretty quickly, and they'll pull that out or they'll explain why they pulled it out, and you can have a little battle with them on why there's been a change. So I think freedom of information. My friends in the military and former military veterans have said to me, "I will defend to my death your right to be wrong."
I've heard that as well from my military friends, also. But I mean, you bring up a great example. I mean, the power of the community to wanting to do stuff for the greater good and ensuring that the information you get is accurate. You may not like it, but it's accurate, you know? So that's really what, at the end of the day, what we all want to get to, or what we all strive for.
Yeah, so probably community fact-checking pressures by our government on these apps where they're forced maybe to continue to produce what they produce, but have a demand that there's some kind of fact-checking feature for anything that gets published that's trying to influence the citizenry would probably be a good direction to go instead of taking away the First Amendment right or shutting down access to information, even again if it's wrong or fraudulent. You get different opinions, different views, and it enriches the conversation. But Antonio, there's a lot of challenges with TikTok and Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and all this and Twitter and all the social media, but it does enrich our lives to some degree. And I think the information should flow, but it should not be used to spy on us or to steal data. And that's where I think hopefully we can head with social media. What are your thoughts?
I agree, and I'll add one more, and that's hopefully, it won't be used to be able to, adjust or change your view or behavior in maybe a way that, is unethical, not right. I mean, whatever you want to call it. But again, what's right for me may not necessarily be right for somebody else. What I consider be unethical might not be unethical for somebody else. But so as long as we keep people informed that, hey, what you're looking at, something, like there's been some discussions around saying this is synthetic media, this is artificially created media or AI related media, some sort of that gives you a warning, like, okay, now I know going in there's no better power than educating your users and educating the people. So education goes a long way to be on the lookout. Just like before phishing became a thing, you had to educate people on, hey, watch out for phishing. Before phishing, it was spam. Hey, you had to educate your people about what's spam. So education goes a long way in terms of people making the decisions to decide, what am I going to look at? What am I going to believe? I'm going into this and engaging with this, knowing that this may not necessarily be accurate, but I know going in there, or at least I know to be vigilant about, yeah, I don't know if that's real. Maybe I want to do a little more fact checking before I think, like, oh, maybe that is something. But it also makes it harder to think what's real today. I just want to watch cooking videos and videos about puppies. Like, that's where I limit my social media stuff.
Those are fun, by the way. And yeah, the cooking videos are great. There's some great educational content out there. I heard, by the way, that TikTok in China is designed to only show content that is highly educational. And then, whereas the TikTok, the stuff we see in the US is designed to rot the brain, allegedly. So you have to just flip through the bad stuff to find the good cooking videos or the puppy videos. Antonio, you work in an amazing company, Fortra. Fortra really could help anybody, whether they're even TikTok themselves, to do a better job at data protection, file management, stopping the threats, getting exploited. Where can we send our viewers and listeners?
Well, go check out our website at www.fortra.com. That's Fortra.com. We've got a rich portfolio of different solutions to be able to help in different parts of your security strategy. We call ourselves being your cybersecurity ally because that's who we want to be. We want to help you improve your security strategy, improve your security posture, and we've got a lot of stuff. We'd love to be able to talk more with you about that.
Antonio Sanchez, you are the principal cybersecurity evangelist at Fortra. Folks, you heard it here first. Go to Fortra.com, learn more about their solutions. They are the cybersecurity ally that you need on your side to get one step ahead of the next threat.
You've been listening to Cyber Defense Radio. Stay tuned next time for another amazing and informative episode. CyberDefenseRadio.com is proudly part of the Cyber Defense Media Group, where InfoSec knowledge is power.
Cyber Defense TV and Cyber Defense Radio have launched 24/7/365 live streams. Visit them online today at cyberdefense.tv and cyberdefense.radio with your host and globally recognized cybersecurity expert and my good friend, Gary Milewski.